This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, episode number 109, Simplicity and the Subtle Body. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast this morning. I hope you're having a beautiful day today. I just got back from teaching yoga, and that always puts my mind into more of a sattvic state, which is a perfect place to be at considering today's topic of the mind. And just a quick update here before we get started. Coming up in July, we will be having our 10-day cooking intensive. This will be a fantastic virtual experience. We will be enjoying it live on a lot of live calls where we'll all have our cameras on and be able to cook together and experience these different recipes together and how to make things in an Ayurvedic way, how to set up our kitchen, have these experiences together. We'll even be doing a little bit of emotional work around food and how we believe and what we think about food. We'll do a little bit of work on creating our own diets as far as for our doshas and imbalances. So you should come away with a pretty good customized plan so that you know what to do moving forward. And I'm really excited about that. We'll have opportunities to customize recipes for you and such. So you can learn more about that at ayurvedalifeschool.com/cookingintensive. And if you have not ordered a free starter kit or participated in the 28-day immersion, those are wonderful programs that will really help you to start stepping more into Ayurveda. You can learn more about both of those just at the website ayurvedalifeschool.com. So let's jump into our topic for today. First off, I love documentaries. I love to watch docuseries. I love things that teach me and kind of entertain me at the same time when I'm watching them. And so I was watching one about simplicity and minimalism. And minimalism has kind of become a catchphrase lately for decluttering, getting rid of things, cutting down on the amount of things that are existing in our lives. And as I sit here recording and I look around at all the many things that exist in my own life, I really feel like it's a message that's pertinent for many of us. And as we look at minimalism and how it relates to Ayurvedic principles, I think there is a strong correlation. So we're going to kind of make some of those ties today as we go through. But living in a simplistic way affects our minds, and cleaning out the clutter in our minds is so important, as well as cleaning out the clutter of our bodies. We just went through a big spring cleanse. It was amazing. We kind of cleaned out the body. We worked on the mind. But to make transformative change, it can't just be on a physical level. We're not looking for the biggest loser kind of change that's going to immediately go back. We're looking for a way of being and finding a new way of being. And I told my husband recently, I feel like I've kind of lost my mojo for a little bit, kind of that zest or inspiration for life. And it's a time to then kind of look at the subtle body or the mind and start to figure out what is going on my mental state, in my energetic state, that's influencing how I'm feeling physically. Because it's so normal and easy to go from the outside in. We start working on the physical body first, and we think, well, if something's wrong, it must be something physically that I can change that will influence how my mind is feeling. And watching this whole minimalism documentary made me kind of think that a lot of times we think that's the way. We think if I'm feeling stressed out, I'm going to change something on the outside, and that will calm me on the inside. While they do go hand in hand, you can't overlook the importance of the inside. Yesterday, we were cleaning the house. We clean on Sundays. It's the only day all the kids are home and we can actually encourage and enforce them contributing to the cleaning of the house. So we're cleaning the house and it's taking a long time. We have a pretty good sized house, and over the years, we kind of bought into that idea of having, you know, more and upgrading and all those kinds of things. And so now we've ended up in a house that takes a lot of time to maintain, a lot of work to keep it up. And as we're cleaning, I decided yesterday I was going to clean an exercise room in our house. So we have a space where we have a treadmill and a row machine and weights and some of those things. And so it hadn't been cleaned in a really long time. As I'm cleaning this room, I'm just astonished at the amount of just dust and pet fur that had ended up in there and just little garbage and just random things, little cobwebs, all the things that had accumulated in this room that we use regularly, but we haven't cleaned it out in a long time. I was a little bit grossed out by some of it, but I also thought, okay, this definitely was needing it. And it felt so much better after I'd cleaned it out. So I was feeling an internal shift based on cleaning up my environment. And I've been thinking so much about cleaning up the mental space. How do we do that? How do we clean up our mental space? And I think a big part of it is creating order in the mind, but also order in our physicality, in our physical space. My daughter is 19. She just moved up to Jackson, Wyoming to live with her grandparents for the summer. And she's going to be working at a whitewater rafting company. And we're super excited about it for her. I think it's going to be such an experience and good time for her to connect and bond with her grandparents as well. I also like the safety of knowing she's still under the watchful care, even though technically she's an adult. It's hard to kind of let go of them at this age. But as she's up there working for the summer, today she kind of had a free day. And so she called me and was chatting with me this morning. And I was just saying, oh, you should go check out the yoga studio that's down the road and maybe go find out about this hike up the canyon. And just was sharing ideas about things I love to do. And if I was a 19-year-old in Jackson, what I would be doing. As I hung up the phone with her, I was trying to tune into the emotion I was feeling because I'm really happy for her and I miss her, of course, but I realized I was feeling kind of envious of the simplicity of her circumstance and for the way that her life right now is just so free of excess stuff, excess commitments, excess stress and obligations. It was a really simple life, and she's going to be having this beautiful experience this summer of getting to live in that simplicity. I know part of that is being young, but I'm also realizing that we bring so much of the stress into our environment, which then affects our ability to function mentally in a good way. And I'm looking at this new Sprinter van that we bought and thought, you know what? We should just sell everything. We'll have a big estate sale. We'll just go and move into the Sprinter van and we'll outfit it and we'll just become hippies living in our Sprinter van, traveling around and be kind of nomads and have nothing tying us down. I don't know that that's actually the answer, although it is really kind of a fun daydream to think about. But as I'm looking at the way that my life has been created and realizing I'm the one who's created it, it means I can also make changes. And so if you're at a place in your life where you've spent so much time accumulating, maybe you're in the accumulation phase still, right? You're accumulating your life. You're accumulating your things, your home, your possessions. You're still having children. So you're in kind of that building phase. Just know that when you get to the other side of it, you kind of start doing the opposite. You spend the first half of your life accumulating and the next half of your life trying to get rid of and simplify. But it's all a choice that we get to make. And it starts on the subtle level because everything that is created physically has to first be created in a spiritual sense or in a energetic sense. It's basically imagination. It's this ability to imagine, where do I want to go? What is the life that I want to create? Where do I want to be? Who do I want to be? How can I get in touch with my inner knowing and that deeper self or my highest self and then be and live in that way? So I've really been spending a lot of time thinking about that. And of course, you know how the universe works. When you are in a frame of mind where you are open to change, open to transformation, open to shifting the way you've been living your life, things come into your life to teach you. And I love the library. You guys know that I pretty much like to read textbooks because that's fun for me. And we were at the library, my favorite place, and I found a book. And this book was called Slow, Simple Living for a Frantic World by Brooke McGallery. And I just was so captivated by the title. I thought, yes, we need some simple living for a frantic world because we all know that the doshas are affected by the way that we live and by the environment around us, right? We're interacting with nature at all times. So the franticness and the speed with which life is moving, the way that we're moving, the amount of things that we're bringing into our lives, the commitments, the schedule, conflicts, all of the things are creating this franticness and it's causing an effect on our doshas. It's causing an increase in that vata frenetic movement energy. It's causing us to push and burn out so hard that we're impacting pitta to the point that we may fall into lethargy and depression and then kapha is involved. So really this franticness of the modern world affects everything. And when we take those to a subtle level in the mind, we see that there are subtle templates or subtle reflections of those physical doshas, right? So vata, pitta, and kapha are affecting us on a physical plane. But then on the subtle plane, we look at prana, tejas, and ojas. And prana, tejas, and ojas are the subtle representations of the physical doshas. And so when we understand that our mind or the subtle body, they call it also the astral body, is an energetic template. It's almost like if you were to take away the body, what would be left underneath it? And I like to think of it as something that's kind of glowing. It looks just like my physical body, but it's an energetic form. It's the movement of energy throughout my body. And that's our subtle and astral body. And it has things in it like the chakras and the nadis. The mind is in there. The ability to imagine things, our thoughts, all of the feelings that we have on that subtle level are there, and they're all governed by prana, tejas, and ojas. Because we can't see the subtle body, it sometimes gets overlooked. I think about this often when I see things like body physique contests, and because my husband was in that space for a while in our lives, I'm a little familiar with it, but he would work so hard on this physical form. And the competitors that he was working against was working on these physical forms because you could see it. You could see the work that they had done and how it transformed them physically. But we don't give awards and prizes to someone for working on their subtle body. We're not saying, oh my gosh, look how strong they've gotten in their subtle body, or look how much they have refined it. Look at how high their vibration is, how fast that vibration is moving. And because we don't acknowledge it in the same way, we often don't work on it in the same way. We tend to then bring the focus back again to the physical body. Something's not right mentally, and we think, well, what am I going to change in the physical body? I know that in times past, I've talked about how the physical body is a really fast way to access the subtle body. This is true. So I'm not discounting what I've said before. It is important that we're focusing on having the proper intake of food, that our lifestyle is proper, because that does affect both the physical and the subtle body. But it's important that we don't always just go back to, well, what can I fix on the surface? So there's a lot going on underneath that we're not seeing just because the energy vibrations are moving at such a high frequency that we just don't see it with our ordinary physical senses. It doesn't mean it's not there. We know that there's energy that moves everything, and it's important that we focus on those as well. Our sense organs, things like our nose, our mouth, our eyes, our ability to taste, to touch, those all exist on a subtle level as well. So the more that you develop your subtle awareness or your intuition, the ability to tap into that intuition, then your astral senses or your subtle senses are also going to be more consciously under your control. The same way that you can focus on what you're smelling, you'll be able to focus on what you're sensing on an intuitive level. And sometimes people will call this extra sensory perception or ESP, just being able to tap into what's going on around you energetically. This is something I'm working on all the time. And because of this intense pitta that I've led in with my life, I've had a hard time acknowledging the intuition, acknowledging the subtle, because I've been so stuck in the physicality. And it's probably kapha dosha that's affecting it too, because that's so much of that earth element keeps you in more of that tamasic state, right? Where you're not movement and oriented, you're kind of a little more in reality, as far as what you can touch and feel. So when we look at the subtle body, the energy, think of the nervous system. So we have the nerves moving throughout the body. They send signals and impulses. They're governed by vata dosha, and they move energy throughout your body. They send messages. They help us to know what's going on. They give us movement. They help with a lot of things, right? We couldn't survive without our nervous system. But in the subtle body, we also have an energetic template of the nervous system, and it moves energy throughout the body as well. And this is where the chakras and the nadis exist. The chakras basically are energetic templates or an energetic similarity or parallel to the nervous plexus in the body. So the nervous plexus are little configurations where all the nervous system nerves join and kind of bundle up, and then they branch out from there. So the chakras work in the same way. And so if you can think of those main chakras that run up and down Sushumna Nadi along the spine, those main chakras like the Muladhara, Svadhisthana, Manipura, Anahata, Vishuddha, Ajna, and Sahasrara. So those were moving up the body from the root chakra to the crown chakra. Okay, so each one has a Sanskrit name. So the names are not that vital that you know. Just know that there are chakras that move up the center of the spine from the base of the spine all the way up to the crown of the head. And those are the centers or the bundles of that nervous system energy on a subtle level. So that's why when we talk about the chakras being blocked, we're talking about the flow of energy not moving properly. And so there's a lot of work you can do within chakras, which could take a whole nother episode that we'll cover in the future. But just know that that's how they're connected. And the nadis are the channels or the nervous system channels in the body. And there are thousands and thousands of these nadis. We focus on three main ones that run up along the spine, right? The Sushumna, the Ida, and Pingala. But that doesn't mean there aren't nervous system nadis running everywhere else on a subtle level. Just like you have your main spinal cord, you have a lot of nerves that run off of that into the hands and the feet, into the mind, in the body, everywhere. But there's also a subtle energetic template of that. Okay, because you can think of the ability or the need to keep the chakras moving, flowing in energy so that you can get all of that energy moving down into those subtle channels. It's really important, right? You need that energy to move. So the two functions of the energetic nervous system are first to circulate energy through the nervous channels, okay, the nadis. And the second is helps determine our experience. This is interesting. So every chakra has the ability or the potential to generate two types of energy, an ordinary subtle energy and a heightened subtle energy. So the flow of ordinary subtle energy is necessary for life. This is how we have the ability to breathe, to move, to function. It's the normal life functioning energy. But when we move into a heightened energetic state, that's where we start to tap into consciousness. And we often can have special abilities are attained, the ability to maybe see someone else's aura, the ability to tap into energy, to work with emotion. And so when we start to really get the flow of the chakras moving well, and then we get into things like Kundalini and the Kundalini energy rising up the spine, which we talked about that a little bit in the episode with Joe Rich, the Kundalini yoga master. So if you haven't heard that one, listen, it was just a couple episodes ago. But when we're working with these channels, we're trying to get to where we're having a heightened state of energy moving through. But in the beginning, just getting ordinary energy flowing properly through the channels and the chakras is excellent. That's what we're shooting for, right? And then we also have within the subtle body our mind. We call this manas in Ayurveda, in Sanskrit. And it exists basically within the subtle body, mostly in there. And what your mind does affects your physical body, but you can't actually touch the mind. Isn't that so interesting? It's such a subtle thing and it controls so much, but you can't touch it. It doesn't have form in the same way that the body does. Within the mind, we think of imagination. So the imagination is very dynamic. It's very flowing. It can be pretty mobile and it's always changing. This is what determines your experience within the subtle world. Everything that you are experiencing in the physical plane first is experienced in the mental plane, in the subtle astral plane. So everything that's happening in your mind, it's really important that you're being aware of it because that is the first stage of that creation. Most of us are not really conscious of this process. Sometimes when you're having a dream, you can see that imagination come up and your mind is kind of having a vacation party and all kinds of things are going on. But most of us are pretty aware of our superficial thoughts. We're not always as aware of our deep-seated beliefs and our feelings. A lot of people have heard of emotional release. They'll go and have an emotional release session, maybe with a coach, to help them get into these deep emotions. I'll be honest, I used to always think that stuff was a little weird. I didn't see the point in it. My mom was really into it when I was a teenager growing up, and I was really stuck in the physical plane. I just thought, oh, that's just hooky-wooky. I don't know what she's up to. But when we realize that it's these deeper beliefs and feelings that we're not even aware of that are creating our experience within the subtle level that then creates our physical experience. So it's very important that we're aware of what our thoughts, our perceptions, our feelings, and beliefs are because that is what is creating that outward physical manifestation. This is why it's important that we work on the mind and that we look at the subtle body. And as I have been told often in my life, this is an area that I need to work on more. And I've been told this from outside sources when I've worked with teachers and with leaders, but also from an inside when I listen to my highest self. This is where my focus needs to be. And I truly think that oftentimes we start to work on the physical self because it feels easier. It feels more, there's more results quickly, and it's not as painful because if we're thinking, well, I just have to worry about what I'm eating, or I just have to make sure I'm going to bed on time, but then we aren't feeling maybe as overwhelmed by dealing with some of these deep-seated emotions or feelings that are really hard to face and hard to even know where to begin with it. But the first step is really just understanding that your creation of your life experience is happening first on this subtle astral plane. and that it's very important that you start to create from that space. I think that's why things like vision boards are so useful and journaling is so helpful, why meditation is good, why getting away from technology and getting out into nature and spending some time in quiet is really useful. And that is why I've been so drawn to minimalism lately, because I just feel this desire to connect on a deeper level with who I truly am. And sometimes all this outside stuff just gets in the way. It just makes it a lot more complicated. When we look at the body and we know, okay, I need to take in nourishing foods in order to feed my body properly, it's just as important that we take in nourishing thoughts and we take in substances through the mind that are going to help our mental experience, because that will ultimately affect the physical experience. And it's so hard to do because our mind tends to just run away with us. It tends to have that monkey mind that we call it, where we're trying to be calm and meditate and then negative thoughts arise or repetitive thoughts arise. We get stuck in kind of a thought loop, it's been called. And so that's where we come back to really working on the prana, the tejas, and the ojas. Remember, prana is a subtle template of vata, tejas is a subtle template of pitta, and ojas is a subtle template of kapha. When we work with all three of these, we're able to have better circulation of the energy through prana. We're better able to metabolize the impressions that we take in, because even the sense impressions we take in have to be digested in some way. And that's what tejas does for us. And ojas gives form to the subtle field on a subtle level. So I know we talk about ojas as far as immunity, strength, the ability to withstand stress and to handle the stresses of life. But on this subtle level, we're talking more about just that form that it gives to the energy that we're able to then tap into. When we hear people talk about the fifth dimension, that's the subtle body. The subtle body moves in the fifth dimension, and it's really governed by the energy of rajas, which is interesting. So our physical body is more tamasic because it's very heavy, it's very earth-oriented. Whereas the subtle body gets lighter and has more movement. And so it's more of a rajasic energy in there. It's a little unstable. It's kind of fluid in movement and there's a lot of imagery. So it doesn't have a lot of form. That's why it's more rajasic. And sometimes you'll see pictures of the physical body and they'll draw lines around it showing that here's the physical body and then there's a kind of a shadow template of the physical body, and that's to represent that subtle or astral body. But there's not really a specific way that it appears. It's important to understand that as you start to work with the subtle body and you start to work with the mind and you're practicing your meditation and you're doing your journaling and you're creating thoughts intentionally, that you'll be able to get more in touch with that subtle body. And it doesn't look a specific way. If you get to a place where you feel like you can see, you know, an aura or you can tap into the subtle body, it might look different for you than other people, and it doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. So what do we actually do with all this? Knowing this information is really useful, but what do we do with the knowledge that the subtle body exists? First, just seeing that distinction is helpful. Knowing that I am the physical, but I am also the subtle or the astral. We haven't even got into the causal or karmic body, which is more the soul level. We're just dealing with the mind. So it's kind of like peeling back the layers of the onion. We're working on the physicality. We're doing things like eating properly for our dosha and trying to sleep and take care of our bodies. But then we got to look at the mind. That's where the subtle therapies start to come in. The meditation, the mantra, the time in nature, even things like the Abhyanga massage is tapping into that subtle body because you're creating a calming and a connection, anything that allows you to go deeper into your own mind. I was talking this weekend with Dr. Victor Briere from the International Institute of Ayurveda, and he was mentioning that we think of Ayurveda as something that is for me, like I am going to work on myself and I am going to be healthy and I am going to do this and that. But Ayurveda was started from much more of a community-oriented energy. It was more, we will be healed and we will have good energy moving through us. So when we see that our consciousness is affected by other people's and the way that we are behaving within our energetic body impacts others, right? You can feel good energy. It's like, oh, she's got good vibes, or, you know, there's good energy in that space. Or whenever he comes into the room, the energy shifts in a positive way or a negative way. Our energy is affecting everyone else around us. And I think that gives motivation to continue to do the work. I mentioned at the beginning of this episode that I felt like I'd lost my mojo. I was really kind of feeling a little bit kind of weighed down by the things of life. And just remembering that I have the ability and you have the ability to create on a subtle level and start moving into new thoughts, new beliefs, new patterns, and that it can be kind of hard and scary at first, but it's also so rewarding because we're healing ourselves and we're then healing everyone around us. And that's truly what Ayurvedic living is about, is that community of healing. So have fun experiencing your subtle body. Just start practicing listening to yourself. That's kind of the first step there, and recognizing that you are not just your body. There's a whole deeper, bigger layer of you that's underneath. We'll talk more in future episodes about chakras, how we can really work and balance into the chakras and some of the subtle therapies. But at this point, I wanted to invite you, if you're really interested in subtle therapies, I'm going to share with you just a little bit about what Dr. Victor Briere is up to with his Pulse Diagnosis course. It's going to be fantastic. It's coming up really soon. I'm enrolled in that and I hope you'll join. So here's just a little bit about that. I am here with Dr. Victor Briere from the International Institute of Ayurveda, and I wanted to talk a little bit with all of you today about his upcoming course because I am doing it. So that helps you to know how committed I am to him and what he is up to and how he's changing the world. And I want to have him share a little bit with us about this Pulse Diagnosis course because I don't think it's just for practitioners. I think everyone would benefit from this. And so, Victor, what are some things that you would want to share about the course so that our listeners know what they could expect if they want to join us in that?
Yeah, pulse reading is a wonderful Ayurvedic art that is not just for practitioners. It is actually a great way to learn the basic principles of Ayurveda because they become kinesthetic and tangible through the process of reading the pulse. So I was studying Ayurveda for probably almost a year and a half before I even really started learning pulse reading. And when I actually started learning pulse reading, I realized it's like, oh, wow. You know, the things that were just in my mind as understandings came to life with pulse reading. It was like, oh, dude, I'm actually feeling it. I'm actually feeling pitta being out of balance in the pulse. This is real. So it kind of gave me that experience. And then once it became real for me, I just wanted to dig deeper. I became more voracious for the knowledge. So it's great if you're looking to understand Ayurveda, and please don't be nervous about, oh, I can't do it or it's too complicated. That's the whole reason we have a course. So we make it really digestible. That's an Ayurvedic joke.
I'm supposed to laugh then because it was a joke. It's an online format, right? So it doesn't matter where people live around the globe, they could participate in this.
It's completely online and it's over 4 weeks. And so you devote 3 hours on Saturday and Sunday afternoon, or if you're on the East Coast in the late afternoon, evening, from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. And we're going to get into it. I mean, we're going to get into the nitty gritty and where, you know, of course, the information's there. You could read a book on the pulse. I wrote a book on the pulse.
You did, which is fabulous, right? Pulse Unveiled. Yeah. I love that book. It's a great book.
Yeah. And so you can accumulate the knowledge in a lot of ways, but really when it comes down to it, the point of the course is you're going to read your own pulses or someone else's pulses who's with you. And you're going to say, okay, I'm feeling this, but what does that really mean? Or what am I even feeling? You know, I think I'm feeling this, but am I really feeling that? So the course is going to help us move through all that stuff in real time so that you can have a real experience with the pulse. And then for those people who can't make it, it's going to be recorded. And of course, you could get the recording. And sometime in August, we're going to do a Q&A for those people who can only access the recording.
What if someone is completely non-intuitive? At least that's what they believe, because I think we are all intuitive. It's something we cultivate as a skill or an ability just by listening. But if someone feels like, well, that seems like I'd have to be really in tune and I'm just really pragmatic. Like, I just want the facts. Is it going to be more difficult for someone coming into it with that mindset? Would it be something that they could overcome? Like, how would you kind of combat that idea or help them to overcome that idea?
Sometimes those people make the greatest pulse readers. Because pulse reading at the end of the day is an art form that engages your intuition. So it cultivates your intuition if you continue practicing the pulse. And sometimes people with that very grounded approach they actually, when they have an experience, they really engender it. It doesn't stay out in the ethers. It doesn't, you know, it's like, no, that was real. That was there. And I could correlate that to a reality. And then kind of, so you've just taken it from, some people start very intuitive and need to come down to earth. Mm-hmm. And some people start very earthy and need to ascend to an intuitive place. But whichever direction you're coming from, you can get there. And pulse reading is a great art form that intertwines the two. You got to be real, but you also got to be intuitive.
Something I have found working with clients too is that over time is where you get that kind of the touch, right? That artistic touch of being able to feel that and working with the same person over time. So if somebody has another family member, it would be really nice if they have someone that they could, you know, be practicing with throughout that course. But if not, they've got themselves, right? You're taking your pulse everywhere with you. So yep. There's really no reason this wouldn't be a good idea for someone to partake in this course.
Yeah. I read my pulses many times a day. It's amazing how much one's pulse changes throughout the day. And yeah, it's also incredible to see, you know, you read your pulse, you get an idea for it. And of course, in the pulse course, you're going to be reading your own pulse quite a bit. But then you go to read someone else's pulse and you're like, wow, it is really, truly, genuinely different. This person is different on that level. And so then that opens up your mind to say, hey, look at all these things I could tell difference in qualities wise, right? Ayurveda is all about qualities. And what does that mean? Because the foundational axiom of Ayurveda that pulse reading is based off of is that form and quality are inseparable. So if you're experiencing a quality, then you know something about the form automatically.
Mm. I'm already being mind blown right now. I'm excited. This makes me excited. What's the first weekend of the course? What's the date for everybody?
It's the first Saturday and Sunday in June. And that is June 5th and 6th. And then it's every Saturday and Sunday through June.
Okay. So it's coming right up as you're listening to this, if you're listening to this real time, now is the time. And where can they register for this, Victor?
You can register it through our website. That's iiayurveda.com. And you'll see, you can go to courses and then you can see pulse diagnostics, or you can just email me directly, victor@iiayurveda.com or reception@iiayurveda.com and say, hey, I want to join the pulse course. And then we can take it from there.
They'll say party on. And I will put those links in the show notes for today's show. So if you're interested, you come and join us. It's going to be an amazing experience. We're super excited.
Thanks, Heather.
Thanks, Victor. We'll talk to you soon. And on that note, enjoy your week. Enjoy working on the subtle body. Hope to see you in the cooking intensive and the pulse diagnosis course. Have a beautiful week. We'll talk to you soon. Namaste. Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it. You can connect with me online at ayurvedalifeschool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.